Welcome back, everyone. Hopefully you found a lunch that'll keep you going through this afternoon. Up this afternoon, we have a couple different things, but first up on our agenda is the Northeast Fisheries Science Center Fisheries Monitoring and Research Division. That is a mouthful. Just go back to the Observer program. Presentation will be from KB McArdle and Christina Thorpe. So I'll kick it over to you, KB.
Thank you very much. So good afternoon. My name is KB McArdle. Thank you to the council for inviting us today. Both myself and my colleague, Christina Thorpe, will be providing an update of the Fishery Monitoring and Research Division, FMRD to shorten it, which sits within the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. FMRD is one of five scientific divisions at the Northeast Center. And just before we get started, I just want to acknowledge that this has been a very challenging year for the division and the center, as it has been for many. Among many things, we took on a new program, we lost staff, and experienced a tragedy we have never experienced before. Next slide, please. So today we will provide an update on our organizational structure, as well as an overview of the standard bycatch reporting methodology, the SBRM. We will provide an update of our C-Day and coverage rate accomplishments and where we stand with our at-sea monitoring spend plan. We will also talk about our contract merge of the biological port sampling program with the at-sea Northeast Fishery Observer program. And finally, we will briefly touch upon our data consolidation and modernization work within the division. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So we collect information, this is our division's mission, from commercial fisheries to support the use of that information to inform fishery science and management. We strive to bring the fisherman's perspective into the federal process through collaboratively producing scientific information. We work very hard to be a trusted presence among the fishing, scientific, and management communities. Each year, we develop a strategic plan. This helps guide our division's priorities and initiatives. Next slide, please. So there are three main branches that reside within the division. There's the Training and Data Quality branch that's run by Ryan Shamma, the Fisheries Monitoring Operations branch that's run by Chad Keith, and the Data and Information Systems branch run by Debbie Duart. Next slide. So I'll touch upon quickly what each branch's main objectives are. So the Fisheries Monitoring and Operations branch focuses primarily on the at-sea electronic monitoring and biological sampling operations. This includes managing the call-in system for required fisheries, C-Day and dealer coordination with our providers, both industry-funded and federally contracted providers, bycatch reporting, and finally, but most importantly, observer safety. The Training and Data Quality branch focuses on all of our QA/QC work within the division, as well as training and trip accounting. So the debriefers, auditors, and our entry staff reside within TDQ, as well as our team that processes our incidental take data. And finally, the Data and Information Systems branch focuses on both data and database management, as well as application development. Our electronic technology resources and data requests run through this branch. And finally, our data consolidation and modernization work fall within DIS, which I will touch upon later. Next slide. And moving on to our standard bycatch reporting, our SBRM overview. So this slide is just a quick review, thank you, of the SBRM Omnibus Amendment and its requirements. So starting in the fall, we began our analysis to be implemented in the spring. So our SBRM year runs April 1st of each year. So what we're going to be talking about today is April 1st, 2025 through March 31st, 2026. The SBRM Omnibus Amendment was implemented in February of 2008 with a revision made in July of 2015. This amendment requires an annual discard report utilizing information obtained from the NEFOP and industry-funded scallop program for 14 federally managed species and sea turtles. Each year, discard estimates and variability, they're derived from the prior year data to inform observer coverage needs. So we essentially look at the prior year observer data, and then we use that to create a new C-Day schedule for the upcoming year. Next slide, please. So the highlights for this year is that there were 4,372 SBRM C-Days allocated this year. Of those days, a little over 2,300 are agency funded and a little over 2,000 are industry funded. There were 350 C-Days allocated in 2025 via MMPA funding. Those days are limited gillnet coverage, which are achieved across multiple gillnet fleets in New England and the Mid-Atlantic region to document protected species interactions. In addition, 43 C-Days were funded via the Office of Protected Resources, OPR, for monitoring of limited gillnet in the Mid-Atlantic region for bottlenose dolphin. Those have been challenging to achieve. And there are six ESA-funded days. Those days are specific for limited gillnet effort in state waters. in order to fill gaps in observer coverage of our NEFOP SBRM test days, and that's based on the ESA's annual determination process. The annual CDA schedule was rolled out after April 1st, but we did work with our federally funded provider to ensure they knew what the CDA schedule was by April 1st. And permit holder letters explaining coverage regulations were sent to high coverage fleets around the same time. Next slide, please. This was touched upon earlier during the updates, but like we updated the MID, we have our SBRM three-year review that's going on right now. This is a full review, which differs from the pared-down three-year review we did last time in 2023. That was limited due to the COVID-19 waivers that we established in 2021, where there was no observer coverage for several months. So for this three-year review, we are looking at the full suite of data. It's going to be using data from July of 2022 through June of 2025. As you all know, an FMAP PDT has been formed, which is comprised of folks from both councils, the Atlantic State Marine Fisheries Commission, the Center, and GARFO. The time frame to complete this work is this summer through next winter, and the report will be published by the NEFSC. Next slide, please. And just a quick reminder of what we're looking at with this three-year review. So it's looking at the recent levels of observer coverage as well as observed encounters in each fishing mode and fishery. It's also looking at the coefficient of variation of discard information for each fishery and the amount of discards associated with each fishing mode. It's evaluating the effectiveness of the SBRM, as well as the implications of the discard information collected under the SBRM. There'll be an updated assessment of potential sources of bias and a description of the methods used to calculate the reported CVs to determine observer coverage levels. Next slide.
Okay, so I'll take us through our CDAY and coverage rate accomplishments for all of our at-sea monitoring programs, starting with our NEFOP coverage from 2025, which again is our SBRM year starts April 1st, 2025 and ran through March 31st, 2026. We're happy to say that 93% of the observer program CDAYs, which is including SBRM, MMPA, and ESA days, were achieved for the 2025 SBRM year. Some of the main challenges that the NEFOP program experienced in 2025 included just staff turnover and transitioning NEFOP staff due to staffing cuts and loss of experienced NEFOP staff. We also had, as mentioned, the federal government shutdown in October of 2025 and a partial DHS shutdown in February of 2026. This affected vessels' ability to schedule U.S. Coast Guard vessel safety inspections for both federal and state vessels. Without a valid U.S. Coast Guard safety decal, they can't carry an observer. Another main challenge is safety of observers at sea. The fishing vessel Lily Jean sank with an observer on board on January 30th of 2026. Observers did not deploy for 5 days because the program issued a do not deploy following the incident. And since then, we've had a pretty unstable cadre of observers in our program. Next slide, please. So this slide is showing SBRM task days and accomplished sea days from 2021 through 2025. The figure on the left is annual sea days tasked by fleet category. Each funding category sea days are stacked on top of each other. So this graph depicts the total sea days tasked for the year, and each color represents the subset of days allocated to that funding category. On the right, we have annual sea days accomplished by fleet category, and this graph depicts the percent of sea days accomplished out of the total task for that funding category. The total number of sea days tasked to the NEFOP has decreased in recent years due to a flat budget, but with rising costs. Most years, the SBRM analysis requires around 8,000 to 12,000 sea days, but a funding shortfall triggers a prescribed prioritization process. The Mid-Atlantic MMPA and ESA days have continued to prove challenging to accomplish. As KB mentioned, gillnet effort diminishes, less vessels are spread out in smaller ports, and it's really highly dependent on catch and weather. And again, state-only permitted vessels are required to schedule a U.S. Coast Guard vessel safety examination and be issued a decal in order to carry an observer, which has been a main challenge in accomplishing these days. Next slide, please. Moving on to our industry-funded scallop program, the total task days for FY25 was 2,046 sea days. An annual observer set-aside is 1% of the ABC, so the number of C-days available for observer coverage is directly tied to the available biomass. With the decreasing ABCs and therefore less available C-days to cover the SBRM requirements, in FY25, C-days were targeted instead of a target coverage rate, which reduced the risk of exceeding the observer set-aside. We're pleased to say that notification compliance has maintained over 85% across the 2025 fishing year, and the scallop fishery self-service rate also remained consistent at 78%. Next slide, please. Thank you. In fishing year 2025, the program completed 88% of task days across all IFS fleets. This graph is just showing a lot of detail here, but the limited access fleet had an accomplished coverage rate of anywhere from 33 to 114%, depending on the area. The Northern Gulf of Maine had an accomplished coverage rate of 128%. The limited access general category dredge fleet had an accomplished coverage rate anywhere between 69 and 105%, not to include the Northern Gulf of Maine. And the scallop trawl fleet had an accomplished coverage rate of 13%. This fleet in particular has been challenging to cover due to port location and difficulty in capturing that effort when it does occur. Next slide, please. Moving on to our ASM coverage update from 2025. The target coverage rate was set on May 1st at 100%, the start of the fishing year. ASM realized coverage rate from May 1st, 2025 through April 30th, 2026 was about 81%. There is a spread in coverage across groundfish sectors anywhere from 72 to 93%. These are, again, preliminary estimates of coverage based on our PT&S data. The final realized coverage rate estimate will come from GARFO. For 2026, you all know the coverage rate is again set to 100%, and so far, as of late May, the realized coverage rate is 90%. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the target coverage rate and realized coverage rates from 2018 to 2025 in our ASM program. The ASM coverage target by groundfish fishing year is what's shown here, and that's a combined coverage target of NEFOP C-day accomplishments translated into a trip-level realized coverage rate and combined with ASM coverage rate to make up the difference. The target coverage rate only applies to ASM-eligible trips. The realized coverage rate for 2025, again, might be adjusted as updates are made to that data. Next slide, please. Some of the challenges in the ASM program have included vessels which are not safe for observers to deploy on. Vessels in this category may continue to sail on groundfish trips without observer coverage as waivers are allowed. Recruitment and retention of trained ASMs continues to be a challenge, especially in light of the past winter season that we've had. PT&S notification compliance by fishing vessels is another minor challenge affecting about 1.5% of notifications. And some of the solutions that we've been working through is a majority of active sectors have contracted with more than one ASM provider, which has helped increase realized coverage levels. FMRD continues to offer opportunities to train new observers and cross-train existing observers. And some sectors have required unsafe vessels to enroll in the EM program. Next slide, please.
So moving on to electronic monitoring. So I think as we all know, the provision to utilize electronic monitoring as a monitoring tool in the groundfish fishery was built into the Amendment 16 and Amendment 23 regulations. As it states in the italicized words up there, the maximized retention electronic monitoring and audit electronic monitoring models, both of our operational models, may be used in place of at sea monitoring to ensure a sector's monitoring programs may be approved. So we've been working since 2010 to develop EM as an alternative tool to meet sector monitoring requirements in the groundfish fishery. And now vessels fishing in the multi-species FMP have the option to select EM or ASM as the monitoring tool. The audit model, in which EM is used to validate industry-reported discards, is entering its sixth operational year, and the maximized retention, the MRAM model, in which vessels retain and land all undersized allocated groundfish, and EM is used to monitor discard compliance, This is also paired with dockside monitoring, was implemented in December of 2023 with the approval of Amendment 23. MRAM, as you know, is currently suspended but remains an approved EM model that can be utilized in the future. The number of active vessels participating in the audit model right now is 35. NOAA Fisheries utilizes an annual decision memo to the Council to outline the process for assigning video review rates for the audit model program. This has generally remained the same for the last several years. So it currently stands at, for FY26, it's 35% review rate for experienced vessels and 50% for new vessels. Momentum is continuing with EM, particularly with the recent interests in vessel of concern vessels and the impact those vessels have on sector monitoring coverage rates. Next slide. So like I said, for FY26, there's 35 vessels that are currently enrolled in the audit model EM program. You can see from this slide, it looks like there's been steady increase in the vessels participating in EM since FY23. We do not expect a drop off in FY26. This is open enrollment throughout the fishing year, so they can join at any point. Typically at the start of the fishing year, it does start off slow, but we do see vessels that have been in are in the process of continuing to enroll. So we do expect that number of 35 to increase. And we are seeing an increase in multi-day vessel enrollment as well. Next slide, please. So FMRD, this is about machine learning, has been working for the past couple years on developing a fish image library with SeaVision AI on the research vessel Henry Bigelow. So this is an automated image classification via machine learning. It's an emerging technology that could result in data review efficiencies and lower program costs for the industry. The aim of this project is to develop a training data set for artificial intelligent algorithms by leveraging existing at-sea fish processing that occurs as part of the semi-annual fish trawl surveys conducted by NOAA. So we partnered with the contractor, SeaVision, who specializes in machine learning and install cameras in the wet lab of the Bigelow. The algorithm development, which we're working on now, is focusing on detection, classification, counting, and measurement, and they're produced in a manner that is compatible with existing EM software applications. So really our next steps are to share fish images and the algorithms with approved EM service providers as part of a pilot study to integrate machine learning into video review software platforms, which we hope will build more efficiencies with the video review process. Next slide, please. And what's next for EM? So NOAA Fisheries recently released funds to FMRD in order to continue the support and progression of electronic monitoring and electronic technology. Funds in this region will help support current EM operations, looking on refinement, implementing more efficiencies to the current system, and help prepare for EM expansion. So the positions in which we're looking to fill falls within all of our three divisions, but probably most notably within our Data and Information Systems branch. Those quickly are our EM video reviewer to maintain and refine current data quality standards, a data auditor looking on refining support materials and integrating EM. We're looking for two data analysts, which are going to be refining data auditing processes and analyzing existing processes, as well as two database developers, which is going to be looking at post-processing initiatives, data integrity, and two applications developers. This is really looking on our AI-generated EM work and our database integration of that work. And finally, we're looking on EM operations staff, which is going to be looking to continue to promote EM, to continue to try to get more vessels into the EM program, as well as our dockside monitoring development if and when maximized retention returns. Next slide, please. And I think everybody knows how EM data are used, but I'll briefly just remind everyone that it's used towards our year-end reconciliation process to finalize data from the completed fishing year, as well as our final catch estimates and rulemaking. These are essential for generating final catch estimates and assessing sub-ACL utilization. We use it for quota monitoring and management. EM data are used throughout the fishing year for weekly quota monitoring. And the Delta model is used to recalculate cumulative discards, which can increase confidence in data over time. Sector managers can access information through SIM to monitor sector quota management. And finally, it's used in stock assessments and quota monitoring for groundfish discards. Next slide, please. So switching gears to our at-sea monitoring SPEB plan. So I think we've seen this table before. This is the one I typically bring up. But this shows the amount of funding we have received since we began receiving appropriations for 100% reimbursement for human and EM coverage in the groundfish fleet in the at-sea monitoring program. So each year since FY18, we've been allocated $10.3 million of directed funding lines to support this reimbursement and the shoreside infrastructure cost to support the coverage. And I will note that in FY22, the appropriations language did state that no less than whatever allocation is given, no less than $5.5 million of the total ASM funding will be allocated directly to the industry to reimburse the costs of ASM and EM. Finally, I just will note that in FY22, we did receive some non-directed observer funding as well to support this fishery. Next slide, please. So this just shows, this is basically a snapshot of our at-sea monitoring spend plan since we began receiving these funds. So that first line item, the industry sea day costs, I just mentioned, this is to fully reimburse the fishing industry to fully cover the cost of the at-sea monitoring and electronic monitoring costs. The next line item, the shoreside support program operations. This includes supporting the pre-trip notification system, so the groundfish fleet has to notify the observer program before sailing. It's our answering service for industry members. It's our processing and quality control of our at-sea data and operations, and our data sharing with fishermen as well. The shoreside support, so the next line, electronic technologies, includes the development, operations, and maintenance of our data and information systems supporting the groundfish fleet. This includes support for our web, mobile applications. We moved to paperless data in this program already, as well as our continued work with database development and management, and our federal records management. The ASM training line item is hosting multiple three-week training courses to maintain the number of at-sea monitors needed to meet the target percent coverage level, which is 100% for the past couple of years. This includes trainer salaries, classroom space, course materials, and the contract for fishing vessel orientations. I will note that you'll see that that dollar figure in FY21 was double what it is now. If you look on the bottom, you can see the coverage target rate was 40%, and we were doubling it the next year. So we had to double the amount of training. So we did contract that out to Coonamessett Farm that year, hence double the costs. The other costs, observer equipment, is the monitoring equipment and gear to support the at-sea monitoring cadre of new and veteran monitors needed for 100% target coverage level. And the mission support is kind of applied across the budget. That includes support for information technology, acquisition, general counsel, and financial management. And again, the bottom two rows demonstrate what the coverage target rate is by fishing year, as well as our realized target coverage rate by fishing year. And as Christina mentioned, for FY26 so far, while it's early, we're at 90% right now. Next slide, please. So I'll just summarize this. There's a lot in here, and it's very small. So this table shows the amount of funding. This is solely focused on the funding that the industry has received for the reimbursement of at-sea monitors and electronic monitoring. So if you zoom down to the bottom, you can see that a total since FY18 of $38.925 million has been allocated to the industry for the reimbursement of at-sea monitors and electronic monitoring. We also did put on the type of kind of vehicle that the money was put on. It did start on a contract, on a grant, but that's been fully moved onto a contract since FY21. And so for the past several years, the funds allocated have been know-your funds. This has been helpful to ensure that we're not going to lose any of these funds after obligation, as fiscal year funding tends to expire after 2 years. That's less of a problem now since we are getting to the point of utilizing all allocated funds each year. So for FY25, we've received $5.5 million. There's currently $5.1 million left, and I think we've been billed through March. So we do have a couple months remaining in the previous fishing year to get through. Sector costs are averaging about total, what's getting per month costs are about $550,000 per month. Next slide, please. And so all funds have been obligated onto our sole source contract with ASMFC through FY25. We currently have FY26 funding as well. That's an additional $5.5 million. Those are being obligated anytime now. Once those funds are obligated, there'll be a total of $10.6 million available. Kind of doing that calculation based off the average funding, I expect that these funds will last through the fall of 2027. Next slide, please.
Okay, I'll take us through our biological port sampling and NEFOP contract merge. So the Science Center recently took on the biological port sampling program, which has historically been managed by GARFO. With that transfer, we merged the biological port sampling contract with the Northeast Fisheries Observer contract. So why did we do that? Well, the observer program is very well structured and well suited to take on biological port sampling responsibilities. Many regions have already integrated biological port sampling into their observer programs, paving the way for the Northeast to follow suit. Moving the core GARFO program to the Science Center improves sample target efficiency and data collection adaptability, as we have staff home ported all over the region for easier access to dealer facilities. A centralized management enhances sampling oversight, aligns requirements with research and management goals, increases communication across biosampling programs, allows for dynamic responses to changing annual priorities, and better integrates the sampling program with the Science Center initiatives. Next slide, please. So this slide is a summary of contract actions over the past year. GARFO and the Science Center worked on aligning the end and the start of various NEPBSP, GARFO, and NEFOP contract actions in the fall of 2025 to ensure continuity of the biological port sampling program. When we awarded the NEFOP contract to AIS Inc., which is the same provider that supplies port sampling services, we fully intended to merge the NEFOP and GARFO contracts. However, there was a possibility we may not have been able to recoup the funds from the GARFO contract if we terminated it. So that potential risk and the benefit of just generally more time with the program to learn with GARFO's support led to the decision to manage the programs together, or the program together. The center and GARFO currently are co-managing the biological port sampling program for the duration of the remainder of the GARFO contract, which will end July 31st. And co-managing allowed for no delays in the sampling program and allowed for samplers to continue to work during the NEFOP contract award. The GARFO contract again ends July 31st, and so on August 1st, the sampling program will be managed solely by FMRD under one contract. Next slide, please. So we're working directly with provider staff, which is improving communications in the field, also indirect communication with assessment staff at the center, which allows them to further refine the sample requests to increase the number of samples they want and when they want them. We're tracking accomplishments weekly and developing sample verification processes to ensure samples are collected and uploaded properly and according to timelines. We're keeping the project on track, providing documentation for future updates to the program, and tracking decisions with assessment scientists in order to document decisions made for our various tracking purposes. We've conducted in-person outreach with dealer facilities across the region to ensure samplers have safe access to facilities and to convey the important use of the samples more widely. Next slide, please. So this is a map of active samplers, including both the core GARFO samplers and the NEFOP samplers. There's a total of 14 active samplers across the region, though we have trained more than that. These 14 active samplers include 5 core GARFO samplers you'll see in the blue bubbles and the 8 NEFOP samplers in the gray bubbles. The distribution of samplers creates more opportunities for sampling across the region. The service providers, area coordinators, their assistant program manager, and FMRD support staff are all trained as samplers as well to help support and provide assistance as needed. Next slide, please. So part of the reason for our success is because of our devoted outreach with the dealers. In-person outreach has been conducted with 15 dealers to communicate the change in program management and reinforce the program's goals. This outreach effort has allowed us to establish connections with new dealers to increase sampling for those hard-to-find species. In addition to outreach with dealers, we're working with other stakeholders, including states and technical committees. We recently provided an update to the Atlantic Herring Technical Committee back in March, and we're collaborating with the committee to share information on the program. Next slide, please. So as KB sort of mentioned, we adopted the program on October 1st, 2026, but that did coincide with a 43-day government shutdown, and therefore our outreach efforts didn't actually begin until January of 2026, so a little later than we had originally hoped. Beginning in January, we've done a really thorough job in trying to reach as many ports and as many dealer facilities as possible. We started in January in northern New England with visits to ports and dealers in Gloucester, Boston, New Bedford, and Chatham. In February, we went to southern New England to Point Judith, Rhode Island, and Stonington, Connecticut. We continued with the Mid-Atlantic outreach in May in Montauk, New York, and several areas in New Jersey, and we are planning to continue outreach farther south in the Mid-Atlantic this summer. Next slide, please. So this slide here gives a direct comparison of length accomplishments for the data we have available in quarters one, which is October, November, December, and quarter two, January through March, compared to previous years by that same quarter. Overall, we're meeting sample requests, and specifically for quarter two, that was the best quarter for achieved lengths in the program's history, so we're very proud of that. The sampling requests for this year are higher than previous years, and we are collectively meeting those sample requests. Next slide, please. So this slide gives a direct comparison of age sampling accomplishments compared to previous years for quarter one and quarter two. The table on the right includes achieved age samples by quarter and demonstrates we are meeting or exceeding accomplishments compared to previous years. Again, quarter two was our strongest quarter, both percent-wise and amount collected. Those species with low age collection include mackerel and white hake. Typically, mackerel age structures are very difficult to collect, while white hake are typically processed, gutted with the head off at the dealer, and thus without the head, we're not able to collect age structures. Next slide, please. So we continue our commitment to finding efficiencies to the sampling program. Expanding to at-sea sampling remains an option and is only possible because of the contract merge. Current at-sea species include spiny dogfish and red hake. At-sea sampling for these species started on March 5th with the goal of investigating which stocks would be best sampled at sea. We did implement a priority one status for observers at sea collecting lengths on these two species. These species are now sampled at sea in our NEFOP program and at the port for the biological port sampling program. Our population dynamics branch at the center thought that these stocks would provide a good contrast, with spiny dogfish being nearly ubiquitous while red hake are much more rarely encountered. We hope this would just give us generally a better feel for which stocks are best sampled at sea if we want to expand sampling biological port sampling in FY27, which we are planning to do. Next slide, please. So some of the challenges we've encountered include multi-stock area sampling, where the stock area for a species must be known in order to collect that sample, yet trips often fish in more than one stock area. In addition, sometimes the market category must be determined by the dealer and coupled with that sample. We can't always determine both for a sample, and we're working to identify solutions right now that will allow us to address these challenges. Some of the historic landing samples included on the sample request list can be very difficult to track and find due to things like infrequent encounters, landings in low quantities, or where landing regions have shifted. We've experienced challenges accessing samples due to low landings driven by seasonality or changes in fishing activity. There are challenges with specialized handling of select species, which impacts availability. For example, winter flounder are packed and shipped quickly at the dealer facility, and we can't access the samples fast enough. Both GARFO and the NEFOP programs have experienced sampler and observer attrition as a result of the sinking of the fishing vessel Lily Jean. And lastly, this is a new program for us. There's a contract and program merger learning curve that we're currently working through now. Next slide, please. So moving forward, we're working to merge the time frame for the port sampling request list to align with the SBRM NEFOP CDAY schedule. Right now, the sample request list starts at the beginning of the fiscal year, October 1st, whereas our CDAY schedule starts at the beginning of our SBRM year, April 1st. In April of 2027, we are going to align the two. We'll continue to collaborate with the Population Dynamics Branch to better communicate how the sample request lists and stock assessments are developed to increase transparency in the program. We'll continue to work with Population Dynamics Branch to consider options for expanding BPS through at-sea observer collection in the future. We'll work closely with states to streamline sampling efforts and increase coordination, and we'll continue to research efficiencies and flexibilities as it relates to samples from split stock area trips and samples that require a market category. Next slide, please.
So these last two slides are just going to be focusing on the data consolidation and modernization work that we've been working on at the division. So focusing on data consolidation, we have a project called Project Compass. Project Compass will consolidate multiple legacy systems related to data entry and processing into one modernized system, while minimizing impacts on data users. So this consolidated system, it takes more effort to build up front, but it's easier to maintain long term and easier for users to have one system. All of our different data processing steps utilize different applications, therefore sometimes different staff. All of these applications are unique and require unique expertise to modify when needed. So we definitely saw areas where we could build efficiencies that were more streamlined and aligned together. So Project Compass will provide one system in which all of these applications align. Reducing the number of systems we have to maintain makes it easier to make updates in the future, and it frees us up staff time for other projects and allows us to make more kind of economical, sustainable decisions in the future. We want to give users plenty of time to transition their code from the old data model to the new model, so we will absolutely do that. And also for our observers collect their data on catch estimation logs, so this will also be automatic, and this will reduce math errors and make the methods more transparent to users. Next slide, and focusing on the data modernization part of our work. So modern frameworks, they're defined by the move from multiple fragmented legacy applications to a single consolidated system, like Project Compass. It also includes using newer programming languages and tools to make products that are more flexible for future expansion, easier to maintain in the long run, and faster to onboard new development staff. So a single set of output tables will make it easier for data end users to query information from multiple programs in one place, in one format. We're also, I'm sure John mentioned, the cloud migration is happening everywhere for NOAA and the government. So our databases have already been migrated, or most of them, and users are seeing high reliability, no downtime from local server outages. Our IT division is doing a great job at testing the infrastructure for our applications, network files, and our other data sets, such as our EM videos that fall under the Federal Records Act. And once our infrastructure is in place, we will work with them, IT, to migrate all of our systems. We've also been part of a larger effort to standard species codes for commercial species records across dealer, VTR, ACCSP, and observer data. So a major step in that process was to translate all existing species codes that currently exist in our databases into the standard ITIS codes, the Integrated Taxonomic Information System, that's used across all US. So layered on that is having market and grade codes available where applicable. So to maintain continuity for end users, we are keeping the old species codes active for now, but they will eventually be phased out when we eventually transition to the new Compass data model. And finally, we recently sent a survey to all of our system users asking about their satisfaction with things like usability, speed, visual design, and quality of updates. We are analyzing these to identify trends by system and user type, but our preliminary results show lower satisfaction scores with legacy systems and higher scores with newer systems, indicating that we're moving in the right direction. So we will do a more in-depth analysis. We hope this will help us identify features of the older systems that users particularly liked or disliked, and places where the newer systems have room for improvement. So with that, I just want to thank the council again for the opportunity to provide an update about the division, and if there's time for questions, we're happy to take some.
Sure did. Great job. I'll open it up to questions for Ms. Thorpe and Ms. McArdle. Terry Alexander.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for the presentation. You had said that you couldn't get the H Whitehake because they don't have a hat on them. Is that something you guys are looking for? I mean, because we could reach out to our boats and say, hey, save some hake with some heads. If that's what we need to freshen up the assessments and stuff, if and how are we getting the H information now? if, or do we not collect age information on Whiteacre at all?
So it could come from our observers or at sea observers with their biological NEFOP component, as sea monitors don't collect biological data. Yes, I mean, population dynamics comes up with the sample request list for us to collect. So we're the data collection program that collect it. If there are issues or difficulties in collecting these samples, we absolutely would love to be work collaboratively with the fishing industry to try to obtain them. I know some work was done already through the pilot program that Jackie worked on, working collaboratively with fishermen to get cod samples. If we're also trying to look at ensuring that our sample request list is as accurate as possible, meaning that what we're receiving from our READ partners at the Science Center are things that we can collect, or is it better to spend our time focusing on our at-sea biological component of it?
Mr. Smith, and then Ms. O'Dell.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the presentation. I had a question on the what's next for EM slide. And I guess my high level question first is just, so there's a number of positions there. I think there are nine or something. Are those, I didn't understand, are those the folks currently on your team now? Or are those proposed to be new hires or some combination of the two?
These are not federal hires, they're affiliates. So some money coming down from headquarters has been flavored specifically to support electronic technology, the emerging work there, and electronic monitoring. So we propose these affiliate positions to support that work that will be pushing ET and EM.
But those, so those would be additional affiliates?
Correct.
Not federal staff, okay.
Yes, additional positions to the current affiliates that we already have.
Okay, that's a pretty significant increase in investment. I think it's great to see that, especially given some of the challenges we've had with funding for some of our federal science endeavors. So encouraged to see that. And also, it sounded like part of this, there was an interest in trying to expand the use of EM. I think that it's a good tool to help us address some of the issues with PT&S compliance and what to potentially do with vessels on the do not deploy list. So I support that expansion. I guess the question I have though is, is your team doing anything to try to look at some of the logistical challenges that occur with EM, particularly with the EM, the audit model and some of the fish handling stuff? Because I know that we've got steady increase in the number of boats that are using EM, but we've also seen, I feel like we're kind of plateauing out. And if we want to expand the use of EM and put all these people to work, I think we need to look at the operational and logistical requirements that fishermen are required to go through if they're using EM. I think we can simplify some of it, and I think if we simplify the fish handling, we have a cheaper, more reliable tool that we can use, but I think it's gonna take some work together to try to address some of those. Any plans in the team to try to think about that issue and what we might be able to do that as we consider Amendment 23 moving forward?
Yes. So part of the work that we did with our machine learning on the research vessel Bigelow to develop that fish image library is we're hopefully going to be working with a contractor that we're hoping to award shortly to build the algorithm. So basically what that will do is it will improve the data, kind of the operational component that fishers have to do at sea. So if they're looking at fish go through, like, they're measuring a fish and they kind of have to take their hands off and then move on, it will remove a lot of those kind of difficult operational tasks they have to do. That's what we're hoping. So looking at this opportunity where this fish image library can identify fish much better than they can right now with the kind of a human component of our data quality reviewers, it will all do it by machine. So we're hoping that that will improve efficiencies and also reduce the operational kind of logistics that get in the way with handling the catch on EM vessels. I think that hopefully that answered your question.
So yeah, I guess just real quick to follow up though, in that example with the AI, presumably you still need to get the fish into a location that the camera can see it so the AI can read it, correct?
Yeah. I don't know exactly what it will look like, but from what I understand, it will remove some of the logistical challenges and barriers that the fishermen have to do, but they still will have to be inside of the camera. So one thing, by trying to increase vessels participating in the EM program, we're constantly looking at ways that we can incentivize. So if there are ideas or ways that you think would be useful to share with us, which I'm sure you have before, but we'll continue to work with you and your team and TNC, happy to do that and think about ways we can do that in the future. This is definitely a priority of ours for next year.
Yeah, I appreciate the offer. One thing I'll say right now to think about, and then we'll move on, is one of the things we've tried to pursue is doing some sort of a volumetric estimate with putting fish in baskets rather than putting fish on measuring boards, so you're not handling every single fish. There's a way that AI can help us figure out how to do a volumetric estimate in a basket rather than handling every fish. I bet you'd get more people using EM.
Dr. Hare?
Yeah, thank you. And I just want to add a little bit to the, you know, the Northeast Fishery Science Center is getting a lot of additional resources to advance EM in this region. That is part of a national priority to advance electronic technologies and electronic monitoring across the nation. So many other regions are also getting additional funds to move EM forward and electronic technologies forward.
Ms. O'Dell and then Ms. Zobel.
Chairman, and thank you, Christina and KB, for the presentation. So I just wanted to ask, just getting my mind wrapped around the monies that are available and left to be set up in a contract. You had said there's 10.6 million will be available once that contract, you know, is created, the additional monies. So there was 10.6, and then you said that these funds are estimated to last through the fall of 2027. I'm assuming that that estimate of is based on a number of sea days and also based on a coverage rate of up to 100%, if that what has been set for this year is set for next year, then it would take us through the fall of 2027. Is that correct?
Almost correct. So the base contract for the sole source contract with ASMFC to reimburse the industry is already established.
Okay.
This is exercising the option year, and that's where those additional FY26 funds will be placed.
Okay.
That is 10.6 million. The assumptions is that we will receive no more money after that because we don't know. And it is basing that average monthly spending with inflation in addition and targeting at the same level at 100%.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, the numbers that you put up are pretty amazing to think that we've had federal appropriations since 2018 to support shoreside and sea day costs for the industry that have totaled over $86.5 million. And I know in this climate and day and age that we're looking at a lot of changes and reductions in spending, and the likelihood of that money continuing is every year is a question, and I think moving forward is going to be even more difficult in light of where we're at today. So, I mean, if those estimates are correct with everything that occurs, I mean, the industry will start paying for, or the groundfish sector program will start paying for at-sea monitoring. Again, no additional funds coming in, but as of next fall of 2027, in an estimate right now. So that would mean that next year sector manager sector contracts or sector enrollment will have to consider those expenses as being part of the expenses that are factored into consideration for next year, if the industry isn't able to continue to help with appropriations. Okay, so the other quick question I have, so you had mentioned it a minute ago in terms of biological samples on trips that are in multiple broadstock areas. We've had that discussion at the council a lot. You had mentioned the Northeast Seafood Coalition and some of the sectors had a program we were working with Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries Service to begin to collect samples of trips that were in multiple stock areas. I'm just curious what efforts are being done now by the Science Center to continue in that effort. We have some big assessments coming up. We have cod coming up next year, moving from 2 stocks to 4 stocks. We were told recently that Georges Bank cod, there is barely any age samples for Georges Bank cod going into the assessment for next year because of that multi-stock trip issue and biological port samples. So we've had the discussion a lot at the council for other meetings that you haven't been at, but we've been told that initiatives have started to do that and to be able to take samples, and I'm just curious if you can talk about that at all. Thank you.
Sure. So I met with Dr. Hare and Michael Simpkins from Reed, and we have been working closely together, and we did present to the NRCC recently. There are some kind of exploratory initiatives that we are looking at. One is the pilot program and kind of continuing with some work with that, seeing if we can work specifically with specific vessels. What's nice about this contract merge is that AIS, who is our provider, was familiar with the biological port sampling program because they were the provider for the GARFO, still are, and they've been our NEFOP provider for a while too. So having that outstanding communication with them and their experience working with vessels, we do feel like there might be an opportunity to continue with some work and really isolate and focus on certain vessels that we can work with at sea when observers are on board, work with ensuring that we can kind of communicate back at the dealer that we have someone there and continue some of that work. We're also looking at sea imputations. So our data and information systems branch is working on an analysis right now to see, are there certain stocks in which we can have some confidence that if imputations were built in, we would be pretty accurate to know which market category they would be in. So that analysis has begun, and we will be presenting the results of that analysis. We've invited all the stock assessment biologists and population dynamics, and that's happening, I think, at the end of July. That meeting. So we are actively doing work, and then Dr. Hare has committed to working with Dr. O'Keefe and meet regularly just to kind of just continue to communicate our work in that arena. And I do feel that we will be making some good headway there and tackle this challenge.
Ms. O'Dell, Dr. Hare may have some answers for you.
Well, I don't have answers, but this has been an issue that's been in front of the council. We've been dealing with it for a while. Our first step was to get the biological port sampling moved from GARFO to the Science Center, which we accomplished in October. We then had a 40-plus day shutdown, so that we really didn't get started until January. So we're 6 months into that transfer. We have been meeting at the Science Center, as Ms. McArdle talked about, what are the different options for dealing with multiple stock areas. So that work is really, we're in the place to get started on that work in earnest now. But it has taken a while to get here, but we are able to address that issue now.
Thank you for that, Dr. Hare. One last question or two from Ms. Zobel. And keep in mind, KB and Christina will be around after this, so if you want to follow up with them directly, thank you.
I will be very brief, and these aren't questions. They're actually just comments. So the first one is that I really applaud the investment in machine learning and AI. That's kind of where we're headed for just such a natural fit for cost and other process efficiencies. As states, a number of us are using and training models to do a number of things. And I think the potential goes far beyond, as you are well aware, what we currently are utilizing EM for. So really happy to see an investment in that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's very small, but the assignment of the ITIS codes, I know what the back end looks like, and that is a huge efficiency from a data flow standpoint. So kudos to those for making that happen and doing those transcriptions. So
once again, thank you both. Great presentation, very in-depth, a lot of good information there. We see some future, we see some bumps in the road moving forward, but I think you guys are doing a pretty good job of getting hopefully what we need here around the table. So thank you very much. Up next, we